Hello and welcome to another installment of the I'd Love You to Health
Elements of Life
Conversation with Experts series with your host, Dr. Russ Slumjia
and Mia Peoples. Today, our guest is Mort Fertel.
Mort is not only a world authority on the psychology of relationships, he is the leader of the best-selling program, the Marriage Fitness Telebootcamp, and has an international reputation for saving marriages. In addition to working with couples, he teaches individuals how to single-handedly transform their marital situation. Mort's Marriage Fitness program is endorsed by marriage counselors, therapists, relationship experts, and mental health professionals.
And as if all that were not enough, Mort has been featured. He's been a featured expert on ABC, NBC, CBS, PBS, and the Fox News Network. He's also a frequent guest on talk radio programs. His breakthrough program, Marriage Fitness, appeared in the New York Times, Huffington Post, Chicago Tribune, Los Angeles Times, USA Today, let me take a deep breath here, Family Circle, Psychology Today, Ladies Home Journal, Glamour Magazine, Parent and Child Magazine, Philadelphia Inquirer, Library Journal, Women's Health, Denver Post, Orlando Sentinel, Baltimore Sun, and the Toronto Sun. Mort, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
You know, Mort, I was so impressed with all of your credentials, and I'm realizing after becoming familiar with the material that it's because what you talk about is so real, is based on such good advice that people want to talk about it. That's how you've gotten all this media exposure. And I just want to acknowledge that our listeners today are in for quite a treat. Now, Mort, both Nia and I work with people to help them realize their highest potential. But we see that a spouse has an incredible influence on a person's personal success. Have you seen examples of this in your practice?
For sure. Look, a marriage is a team, it's a partnership, and you know, each of our success outside the home is really dependent upon our success inside the home. A marriage and the primary relationship in our life, you know, it can either weigh down the success we might otherwise have in our life, or it can really be like the engine, the rocket that, you know, propels us to greater success. You know, just to make this more tangible, and just think about it on a very practical basis. You know, if in the morning you have a big fight with your spouse and there's stress in the home, or you walk out feeling, you know, depressed about your marriage, so that's going to be distracting. It's going to be hard to focus. It's going to be hard to come to your work and to your day with maximum energy and to achieve maximum potential. If, on the other hand, you feel like when you leave your home in the morning that the home is intact, that it's strong, that I feel great about my marriage and my family, and I feel loved, and I feel good about the way I am loving, then you feel free. You feel open. You feel like, you know, you can tackle the world now and succeed at the challenges that face you in your career. So, you know, there's no question that the two are, you know, bound up together.
Mort, I know that, you know, I'm married, and I know there's a basic difference between men and women and how we're built and what we can handle. You know, that we're just wired differently. In fact, my daughter, Sienna, when she was about six, she was standing there kind of witnessing a conversation between me and my husband, and she just said, you know what, women, she was 6 years old, women are like an octopus, but men, they're like a sea slug. When she needed something done, she would come to me because I had all these arms that could handle everything at the same time. Whereas with her dad, if she needed something from him, she needed his full attention, and I need this, this is, she knew that there was one thing he could handle at a time. I mean, that's a real basic difference. But a lot of times, I think women are the base, they're like the overall caregiver of the home, where we're handling a lot of things at one time, and then the self-care is at the bottom of the list. I have two questions in regard to that. How does a woman get her husband to engage in that and help her help herself without emasculating him? And the other question is, how does a husband who is aware of this get a woman to help herself?
Mm-hmm. I think that this may sound like an overly simplistic answer, but I think it's important for a woman to recognize the need to spend some time taking care of herself, recognize that her ability to find the time to take care of herself is not a selfish thing, but it's actually an unselfish thing, because it strengthens her, it fortifies her, it empowers her to be a better mother and a better caregiver. And therefore, her role in, and this is the more direct answer to your question, her role is to ask her husband for the help that she needs in order to find the time and the energy to take care of herself. Now, that may sound really simple. Let me offer just one more piece to that, which is, I think a little bit more insightful. It's easy to ask, you know, honey, could you, you know, bathe the kids tonight, or, could you put Joey to sleep, or, you know, would you mind cleaning up from dinner, or, you know, that's pretty simple and straightforward. But the key to your husband responding to that in a positive way is this underlying strength of the marriage. In other words, if there's all this stress in the marriage, if you've been neglectful to your husband, if he's feeling that you are continually rejecting him emotionally or sexually, if he's feeling like he's unappreciated and he's just the family bank, then when you extend that request, he's not going to be feeling very motivated to be helpful. Whereas if the underlying energy in the marriage is positive, if there's lots of goodwill, if you've been appreciative, if you've found time to spend with your husband, if he feels that he's sexually desirable to you, and things are generally going well, then when you extend that request, he's going to be motivated to say yes and to be helpful.
Right.
You know, if I may, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Mort.
No, I was just gonna. I was gonna answer also, Nia. You asked about the husband, what he can do. So sometimes it really depends on the family, the nature of the personalities. You know, there's a lot of different dynamics there that you're alluding to. But sometimes in some families, and this may sound like a very practical response, given, you know, what I do for a living. But sometimes I think the solution to some of these things is to be very practical. I think that sometimes money can solve some of these problems. Now, not every family has the money to throw at these problems, but sometimes, you know, let's say you have a husband that is the way you described, Nia, you know, he's only good at doing one thing at once. He's not necessarily such good at the family and home things. And yet you have a woman who needs some time. She needs some space to take care of herself. So, what can a family do? Well, one thing the husband can do is, rather than trying to necessarily tackle all these jobs that she needs him to help with, maybe what he should do, if he can afford so, is to hire somebody to come in for an hour or two to help his wife. And, sometimes that is a very good solution for a family to sort of free up time for the husband and the wife to either be together or to take care of themselves.
Right, and then follow that help up with, okay, honey, I've got somebody to come in and clean the house. You and I are going to go out and have a picnic or do whatever it is that you want to do. Is that what you're trying to say? Is that
exactly.
It's you kind of far enough?
Exactly.
And so just to be clear, what I heard you say is that kind of step one is if you're the woman in the relationship, the first thing you kind of have to wrap your head around is that it's okay to want to take care of yourself. It's okay to have these needs. In fact, it's more than okay. It's imperative. In fact, your role as the caregiver is to take care of yourself first, kind of like on the airplane where you have to put the oxygen mask on yourself so that you don't pass out before you're able to put it on the child sitting next to you. That's very, very practical advice that I think people lose sight of in their very, very busy world.
I hear too is that really for women, it's an amazing thing. I run into this all the time with my friends, and I catch myself doing it too, is really at the base of all that is a lack of valuing myself. I don't value, it isn't just that I need help, it's that I'm not putting enough value on myself, and so I can't step outside myself and go, I need this. So
it
begins with that, I think.
It begins a cycle, and, you know, this speaks to what Mort said, is like, a lot of times if a man is in a relationship and he doesn't feel loved, whatever that means, then it's harder, then he retreats. I get that, totally get that. But some of that comes from when the woman in the relationship doesn't love herself, how can she have any left to then give out? I mean, I totally see that. I get that all the time, is that you assume this role as caregiver, you're doing the best you can, you're completely overwhelmed, you don't realize that the thing you need the most is to take care of you so you can come back refreshed and recharged and ready to take on the world, so you don't do that because you don't recognize it, and you don't. So that makes you feel crappy about yourself, and when you feel crappy about yourself, you don't love yourself enough to take care of yourself, and the cycle continues.
Right, and
to
really what's
degrade.
Wrong with woman is, why can't you get this done? Like, your list is this long, but why haven't I completed it? It's just
right.
This sort
right.
of self-hatred place, like, I'm
right.
not good enough. It's crazy.
You know what I
like that.
You know what I love about arriving here in the conversation right now is that this is exactly what Mort described at the beginning of the discussion when he said, listen, if you don't feel fulfilled at home, you're not going to be able to go out into the world and conquer the world. But when you do feel fulfilled at home, man, you can take on anything. Well, now we're going to take this one step in and say, if you don't feel fulfilled inside yourself, then you can't go out into the family and take on the world. Does that make sense, what I'm trying to say?
Absolutely, yeah. I'd like to add 2 points to this, if I could. Is that okay?
Yes, please.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I agree 100% with where this is going. I want to add 2 points that I think are useful. And number one is that it's important for a woman to recognize that while she has a tremendous responsibility to take care of, let's say in a traditional sense that you're describing, to take care of the home and the children, her responsibility as the matriarch of the family goes beyond that. Her responsibility is also to teach her children certain values and to promote a certain lifestyle. And if she, let's say, for example, is neglecting herself physically in terms of her health, so then I think she's failing as that teacher, as that matriarch, right? In other words, let's take just her physical well-being as an example. When she takes time, let's say a half hour, 45 minutes out of the day to exercise, it's not just that she's taking care of herself so that she can then be stronger to take care of the children. It's that she is promoting a value that is teaching the children something really important, right, which is that our health and our well-being is important and we need to take time to take care of ourselves. The only way they're going to learn that lesson is from us, right? It's Parenting 101 is from Ralph Waldo Emerson, who you are speaks so loudly, I can't hear a word you're saying,
right?
Right?
That's
or
true.
Somebody else put it another way, which I love. There are 3 keys to parenting: example, example, mm-hmm. and example.
Yeah, that's
and it's
so
true.
True.
It
I
really
mean,
is it.
And,
and that's true in all leadership, as we learn from business. As a business leader, it is very much about the values that you live,
right,
not what you say.
That's exactly
and what I
right.
love about what you're saying in terms of, it's sort of that angle of, well, look, this is the example that you're giving your kids. I say this to my sister when she's got 3 daughters and she really overworks herself, and I say, look, this is the example you're setting for your kids and how your daughters are going to grow up treating themselves that way.
Right.
Because women, you know, the kids will always come first, generally speaking,
right,
with the women. So
right,
when you say it like that, you kind of go, whoa, wait, I better check my steps here. And I do a lot of work with the American Heart Association, And for that very reason, they've created they've created this thing called Go Red for Women, aiming directly at the women, trying to teach them exactly what you're talking about, because they are the caretakers of the house, and this is how it's going to make systemic change. So that is a beautiful, beautiful angle in regards to
all. Yeah. The second point that I wanted to make is really a point in a very different direction. It's an attempt to somewhat temper the direction that our conversation has taken so far. Because I find that while the message we've put out there so far is very important and very valuable and on target for many of your listeners, I'm concerned that some of the listeners might be people that fall into the following category, because I see this all the time. And that is people that are not family-oriented enough. They're really very selfish and have been trapped by the message of society that, and our culture, that, you know, it's all about me. And as a result, you sometimes have, we've been talking about this in the context of women, so I'll stay with that, but it doesn't, not necessarily gender specific, but, you know, sometimes have women who are so into themselves that, from my perspective, they're neglecting their primary responsibilities as a mother or a wife and the matriarch of the family. So, you know, they're going out with the girls, you know, three nights a week, and they're going on separate vacations with their girlfriends, and they're spending all day getting their nails done and their hair done, and exercise is not something that's empowering them or fortifying them to take care of their family. It's something they're spending 2.5 hours a day on, and they're traveling, going away to run marathons, and, you know, there's just this lifestyle that's being established that I think is a detriment to the family.
And so it's the other extreme, I guess, is what you're
yes.
expressing.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right. And I think we have to be careful of that.
And I think you bring up a very valid point. Is the underpinning here is that when your marriage is a team or a partnership, or your family is a team or a partnership. I mean, a lot of our listeners are empty nesters, so their family has now become the two of them again. That team concept is no less relevant. You know, when you're on a team, you act in the interest of the team. And one of the things that we work with people is to establish a common mission, a common goal, whether it's raising kids or being healthy into your old age or whatever it is. But acting as a consolidated unit is incredibly important. So exercise just for exercise's sake or for selfish sake, I can understand what you're saying. Would you say something similar, Nia?
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think, you know, the interesting thing is as I'm listening to Mort talk, I'm kind of applying it to my own life and the people in my circle. And even the women that I know that do that kind of a thing, that are, they're marathon runners and there's nothing wrong with doing that, but they're kind of obsessed with this life of their own, separate from their families. I tend to see, at least in my circles, kind of a desperate need, an expectation that they have of themselves to continue being that person they were before they got married and had children.
That's a very interesting point.
Yeah,
and on the converse, I have a friend of mine who's a marathon runner who makes it a big family event, and
right.
the, everybody's
yep.
involved, and the kids are involved with training. And excuse me, I'm sorry I interrupted you. So it can go either way. The marathons itself aren't really the problem.
No, not at all. It's the expectation that I think sometimes we buy into something at a certain phase in our lives, and then there is this expectation that we're supposed to be able to hold on to that when life is constantly growing and changing. And
that's something I love about your work, Nia, is you really recognize that you need to go through life and go through stages of life and kind of evolve who you are as a person, and hanging on to this nostalgia isn't always that healthy.
Right, and it doesn't bring you happiness either, and I think that's one of the things they don't understand, you know, people don't understand. And we're also being sold that bill of goods in the media. I mean, you look at television,
yeah.
What are we supposed to do? We're supposed to have it all at the same time, when you kind of can't, and nor should you.
Sure. You know, if I may just tell a quick story. When I way, way back years and years ago, when I first went through my coach training, we used to train people to complete what's called a circle of life. And what they do is they assess different aspects of their life on a 1 to 10 scale, and then you plot them on a circle. And if you're, like, really unsatisfied with an area of your life, it'll get a lower score, so the wheel will look kind of flat. And in the training, I was told, you know, tell your clients how is your life going to continue on a flat wheel like that? And I thought about it, and I thought, when I was building my business, I needed to put more energy into building my business. When I was building my family, I needed to put more energy into building my family. And it's okay that your life goes through the ebbs and flows, and you concentrate on things that need to be concentrated at that time. So what I started to train clients to do is to imagine their life, their aspects of life, as petals on a flower. You are your core being. You are the center of the flower, but each petal may be a little bit longer, a little bit fresher than the others, and that's okay, as long as you don't let any of the petals die completely. Did that make sense, or was it a little too complicated for you?
Nice. Well, that's a nice metaphor.
Yeah.
So, Mort, I just want to continue on and talk a little bit about people's health as a couple. Several large studies have shown that husbands and wives are remarkably similar on various dimensions of cardiovascular health, such as body mass index, waist circumference, and the percent of the calories that come from fats. Now, even though they share no genes whatsoever with each other, we hope, they tend to assume many of the same health risks and benefits. Can you maybe help us understand why this may be from your work?
Well, the first thing that comes to mind, I don't know if I discovered this from my work, but the first thing that comes to mind is that they're most evenings sitting at the same dinner table. I think that's relevant to the studies you're pointing out, because, you know, they're eating the same food, and food is such a such a big part of our health and well-being. So I would say that that's one factor. I would think the second thing is that, you know, spouses influence each other. And so the lifestyle choices that they make in terms of the amount of sleep that they get, the amount of exercise that they get, once again, the kinds of foods that they eat, the overall lifestyle, you know, are they drinking, drugs, husbands and wives influence each other, and there's sort of a family culture that gets created over the years that contributes to our health. And
I really like that word culture, because the family really does have its very own culture. Like when you travel to a different country, you experience a whole different culture. That's what it's like in every single family, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely, yeah.
Well, Mort, one of the things I've noticed with women is that they complain that their men don't seem to understand what it's like to live in a woman's body, no less when, like, a menopausal body. I don't understand being in a menopausal body, but I don't know how we're supposed to expect our husbands to understand it. But they say that it's difficult to get their men to grasp the struggles that they have with body image, fitness, eating well. Like, it's a different thing. I mean, my husband, for instance, he just gets up and goes to the gym, and he has his own thing that he's doing. But going through the changes I'm going through, it's difficult to get him to understand what that is. How do you recommend a couple sort of deal with that?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's important that it's kind of like, let's say, Nia, you were to take up, you know, an interest in astrology, and your husband's not interested in astrology and doesn't know the first thing about astrology. So the astrology now becomes an important factor in your marriage, and it could go one of two ways. It's either going to be something that divides you, or it's going to be something that unites you. And that really depends on how both of you treat your interest in astrology. For example, you know, if your husband takes an interest in it, not because he's interested in astrology, but because he's interested in you, so then that's going to promote connection between the two of you, and it'll make this thing of astrology that's something, you know, something that unites you. Also, you, Nia, in the example, you know, if you insist on, you know, going to an astrology course with your friends and having it be something that is separate from your husband, then once again, that's an example where it's going to promote divisiveness. Whereas if you sit down with your husband with an astrology book and share with him some of what you've been learning and reading, that's the kind of thing that promotes astrology coming between the two of you. So getting back to menopause, it's a similar thing. It's important that it as husbands and wives that we take an interest in our spouse and in their interests. And in this case, menopause is not necessarily your interest, but it's something that a woman goes through. And so, you know, a husband should take an interest in that. What would that look like? Well, it might look like, you know, a certain inquisitiveness. What are you thinking? What are you feeling? What does this feel like? It may result in him doing some research online or speaking to a friend that's a doctor. What is this menopause thing? What's going on with my wife? Why is this happening? I want to understand her. And one of the deepest needs a human being has is the need to be understood. Inside of each of us is a little boy or a little girl that just wants to be understood. When a woman's going through menopause and her husband tries, spends time and energy and effort trying to understand her, that means the world to her. And it can make that menopausal experience something that unites you rather than divides you. So you really, each of you have to really treat it as something that is, you know, that we are going through. You know, there's a quick good story of a married couple that married for many years, and they had a very good marriage, and he was a great husband, and so he brings his wife to the doctor, and they come into the doctor's room, and the doctor says, "So what's going on?" So the husband speaks up and says, "Doctor, the problem is my wife's leg. It hurts us." And that's exactly, you know, that kind of attitude. If a man could bring that attitude into the period of life where his wife is going through menopause, it would be very helpful.
That's a brilliant perspective. So it's not just that a guy goes out and learns everything about menopause. He tries to learn about his wife's experience with now, if it happens to be menopause.
Right, and that it matters.
Right.
Yep. I love that. It does, because it makes me, I mean, just listening to that, it made me feel protected, you know. And in an age where women are very independent, I'm very independent, and, you know, I have my own career, I have all of it. We're taught, my generation was taught, hey, stand on your own two feet. But at the same time, we want to feel protected, right? And so we don't.
You want to feel safe.
What's that?
You want to feel safe.
Yes, and so just hearing that simple little sentence made me feel really safe. Like imagining myself in those circumstances, it's beautiful and so simple.
Yeah, I think what I like most about what you just said, Mort, is inside every one of us is a little boy or a little girl that just wants to be understood. And for our listeners, listen carefully. Whether you are a man or a woman involved in a relationship, it is your job to seek first to understand before you are understood. If you can do that with anything, menopause or anything, you're going to create a relationship that is so incredibly strong. You have no idea what that one thing will do. That's love. Would you say?
Yep.
So, Mort, you know, it's almost cliche that talking about health and weight to a spouse is a literal time bomb. And certainly in my work at I Love You to Health, we help couples achieve a relationship that is so safe they can say anything, including, yeah, honey, you know, those jeans do make you look, well, anyway, you know the rest of that. My question is, are we crazy? I mean, do you believe that a level of safety is possible, that you can talk about these things? And if so, how do you help couples feel safe about talking about anything?
Well, the safety that we feel in a relationship, I think, is, you know, directly corresponds to the level of connection that we have between us. Connection is just another word for love or emotional intimacy. They're all synonyms. You know, when you feel loved, when you feel connected, when you feel like, you know, we're a real team, so then, you know, people feel safe. And, you know, there's an expression, I don't care how much you know until I know how much you care. So when a person, if your spouse knows how much you care, then they'll be more open to what you know. They'll be more open to your influence. They'll be more open to your critique. They'll be more open to, you know, you offering a suggestion. So it really, that level of safety and the openness to each other really comes back to the core of the relationship. And if the core of the relationship is there and it's healthy and it's strong and the people are connected, then, you know, they'll be open to each other and you can say many more things more easily and they'll be received. When people are not connected, whoa, you can't even say something that's completely innocent because it'll be interpreted as an attack, you know?
Yeah.
But I want to say something else, too. Now, this might sound somewhat contradictory to what I just said, but I don't think it is. I think that this idea that husband and wife should be close enough and love enough and the relationship should be open enough that we can say anything to each other,
mm-hmm.
I think that is naive and
okay.
unrealistic and highly unsophisticated thinking. The truth is that there are many instances when we're thinking something and we should just keep our mouth shut. And it's just not going to be helpful to say it. And we shouldn't go running around claiming that we can say anything we want, and if I can't be open, then, you know, there's something wrong with our relationship. No, I think there's things that should go unsaid. And,
okay.
You know, like somebody, I was on a session yesterday. I'll give you a real live example. I was on a session yesterday. And this gentleman, you know, admitted that he's having a very hard time. His wife has put on a lot of weight. And he's still attracted to her, and they're still being intimate, but it bothers him. He's having a hard time with it. And so sometimes his wife will ask him, how do I look? And he's been responding. He said to me, there needs to be honesty in our relationship. So I'm answering her honestly. And she hates him for it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
I understand what you're...
I said to him, that's not honest. That's stupid. Your wife comes downstairs going out to a date with you and she's all dressed up. And the honesty is not the only value in the world. We also value peace. We also value... you know, sensitivity to somebody else's feelings. Just to give you an extreme example, if you're a Jew and you live in 1940 Nazi Germany and the Nazis come knocking on your door and say, are there any Jews in there? You better say no. And that would be the truth with a capital T. To hold out on the value of honesty and say yes there would be foolish. Now, it's an
extreme... you know, I appreciate what you're saying, and I believe what I said was a couple can have a relationship that is so safe anything can be said, and then the next question is, should you? And that's the responsibility. That's the next level depth of thinking. In other words, with that particular client, what I would do if we were working with them is we would talk to him about, well, what are your motives? Where are you coming from? If you can say it from a place where it's about her, it's about your concern for her and your concern for her health. If you can really internalize that what you're thinking and what you're saying is about her and separate what about this issue is about you and what about this issue is about her, that represents a deep complexity of thinking and a deep complexity in the relationship.
Right.
So I'm not so sure that it's misguided to create a relationship where anything can be said. I do think it's misguided to create a relationship where anything can be said and then say anything. That I don't believe in. But do you see the subtle difference in what I'm saying?
Uh-huh. Yeah, I appreciate that distinction. I think you're right.
Yeah, and I appreciate you bringing that out as well, because it is not smart to say anything, but it is smart to continually reevaluate your particular motives and see where they're coming
right.
from.
Right.
So, Mort, go back to that couple.
Okay.
What should he say? Or should he say anything? Or is it what Doc Russ was saying? Okay, let's look at this from a different angle. I know how.
Yeah, I think what he should say is he should try to find something about his wife in that moment that he finds attractive. I'm sure that if he looks at her belly and the weight she's put on, that wouldn't be the part. But he could probably find something so that he could respond to her in a positive way. And that positive comment then would still be a comment of integrity for him. And he should not say what's going to be hurtful to her and not helpful.
And so then going the step, I understand that completely, and going the step further in regard to how it's affecting her health, at what point does he have that conversation? I mean, if the husband is, if she's gained weight to the point of it hurting her health, and
right.
How does he have that conversation, or should he?
So that gets back to, I don't care how much you know until I know how much you care. Mm-hmm. He should have that conversation when he's confident that the goodwill in the relationship and the connection between them is sufficient so that that will be received in a positive way by her.
And that she feels safe enough in that conviction. And that's why when, and I don't mean to tag on here, but one of the most important things that I know with me, one of the things that I really am passionate about is getting people to understand the motives behind their feelings and the beliefs behind their feelings and start to kind of see if they can bring themselves to a place where before they say anything about somebody else, it really is about them, for them,
mm-hmm.
from, you know, in their best interest. It's okay to have selfish interests, like because you want somebody to look better or whatever. It's okay. You have those. You can't deny your feelings.
Right.
But it is important to get in touch with the part of you that is really concerned about them.
Right.
And
I think
have
that's
true
that's
intentions.
True. Right. I think that's absolutely true, and it certainly would be helpful if the person came to the conversation and their intent was really the health and well-being of their spouse. Absolutely true. But I think we also have to be careful that no matter how pure our intent, no matter how unselfish our intent, it's still possible that the message that we would want to deliver could be very hurtful, and very hurtful to the person and explosive to the relationship. And we just have to be, you know, aware of that possibility and maybe, the you know, exercise good judgment in refraining from having the conversation.
Right. It is important to understand that your intent and the impact are two completely different things, and that you don't know what impact your intent is going to have once you release it from your mouth. And that is a very, very important point.
Right. Exactly.
Well, you know what? One thing I wanted to add here, and it's a little bit off topic, but not completely, and that is that I love the title of your, you know, the marriage fitness program as opposed to marriage counseling. I love that. To me, just the name itself is powerful, because marriage counseling to me means I'm doing something wrong, where marriage fitness means, hey, I'm doing something right because I'm going to make my marriage fit. So
I like that
yeah.
a lot, too.
I mean, that means that to me, that actually, in regard to, like, even going to my husband, I mean, all marriages go through their ups and downs. So if I wanted to handle something with my husband and kind of approach him, it'd be much easier for me to say, honey, take a look at this marriage fitness thing. That's something we do together. If I said, let's go to marriage counseling, I'm telling him there's something wrong and you need to fix it, or we need
right.
to fix it. It's just it's a different perspective, and I love the title.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So, Mort, what would you, if let's say we wanted to direct our listeners to a place where they could find you and learn a little bit more about you, where would you want them to go?
So they could, you can subscribe to my free report, Seven Secrets for Fixing Your Marriage, at marriagefitness.com. And that's probably,
okay.
That's probably the best starting place, marriagefitness.com. You can get some information about me and get access to my free report, Seven Secrets to Fixing Your Marriage.
So they go to marriagefitness.com and they sign up for your Seven Secrets to Fixing Your Marriage, which I think, like a million people have subscribed to that already?
That's right. Yeah, over a million.
So they'll be in good company. They can expect to get your report and I guess an occasional email from you just letting them know what's going on or maybe some more interesting tips or things like that
The report comes via email.
Oh, beautiful. And do they get any follow-up after the report or do you keep in touch with them somehow after that?
Yes. Uh-huh.
That's terrific.
When I hang up.
And they'll also get some more information there about the Marriage Fitness Telebootcamp Camp and, the other products and services that I offer.
So that's terrific. So that is the place to start if you want to get to know Mort Fertel is at www.marriagefitness.com. And once again, thank you, Mort. This is Doc Russ from I Love You to Health.
And Nia Peoples from Elements of Life wishing you and your loved ones all the best.